Okay, Job chapter 38, and here we find that in this section here, I want to read, first of all, the first three verses, and as we get into it, it says there, and then the Lord answered Job out of a whirlwind and said, "Who is this that darkeneth counsel by words without knowledge? Gird up now thy loins like a man, for I will demand of thee, and answer thou me." All right, so for a long time now, Job's been troubled with all of his plagues, of his boils from head to toe. He was in misery. It was absolutely miserable for months. And he was getting to the point where Satan was almost conquering. It was to the point where Job was starting to get upset with God. He's saying, "It's not fair. Why don't you just talk to me? Why don't you tell me what's going on? I haven't done anything that I know of that was wrong." And Job's really getting impatient in toward the end of all this whole thing. Plus all of his three friends picked on him and blamed it all on him. And then Elihu came through and gave him some good suggestions and some good advice. And it got him just thinking. And then God steps in now in chapter 38 to the end of the book. And God starts talking with him. And, you know, just picture in your mind here. It says that God spoke to him out of a whirlwind. Now, we can run right past that and not even notice it. But that's significant. I mean, there's some sort of a whirlwind, some sort of mighty wind, whether it was a tornado type of a wind or just a loud roaring wind that was whipping around his house. And God was speaking out of that. And so this whole time that God's telling him all these things, he's hearing the voice of God out of this whirlwind. And it was a very dramatic type of a situation. And as we look at this here, God questions Job and asks him a lot of questions. In fact, he asks him 40 different questions in chapter 38 and another 19 questions in chapter 39. Lots of questions for Job. And as he's asking these questions, he breaks them down into categories. And I would strongly encourage you to either download the notes or else just pay close attention when I change gears and put a little by the side of the verses there. It'll help you as you're going through to be able to see the breakdown of these different categories. And it'll make a lot more sense as you read through it later on. But he addresses, first of all, the physical world. He asks Job a whole bunch of questions about the physical world. And then he addresses Job about the animal world and asks him a bunch of questions about the animals of the world to see what he knows. Now, why is God doing this? God is doing this to Job to help Job to realize God knows far more than he does. God's got much greater power than he does. And God isn't just sitting back ignoring the situation as Job's going through all the suffering. He's saying, "Job, I am in control. I understand what's going on. I control all these other things. Certainly, I'm not going to forget you." And he was helping him to see that. Now, that's a good thing for us to focus our thoughts on tonight. God knows far more than we do. God is far more powerful than we do. There's tons of things out there that we have no control over at all, that God is in complete control of. And with that thought in mind, when the troubles come our way, and we say, "God, where are you? What are you doing?" We can say, "I don't understand, but God knows. God knows what he's doing." And that's an important thing for us to remember. So as we look at the physical world, first of all, verses 4 to 7, God asks the question here, "Where were you at creation?" Where were you at creation? Verse number 4, "Where wast thou when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare if thou hast understanding. Who hath laid the measures thereof, if thou knowest? Or who hath stretched the line upon it? Whereupon are the foundations thereof fastened? Or who laid the cornerstone thereof? When the morning stars sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy." So he says here, "Job, what do you know about creation? What do you know about all these things? Job, you didn't even exist then. You weren't even there. And you don't know anything about these things. You weren't there when the angels sang and rejoiced at seeing the great creation that I did. You didn't see any of that, Job. You weren't there." And, you know, as we look at this, you know, people who ignore the Genesis creation of the Bible have no idea how creation began because none of them were there. And scientists and people are guessing and speculating all the time, trying to figure out where everything began. God tells us where it all began, but they don't want to believe God, and they try to find out. But they're never going to find out because there's no way you can find out something you weren't there to see. And so God tells us the information, and he challenges Job on that. Then next we see in verses 8 to 11, he asks Job the question, "Who holds the seas? Who is in control of the seas?" Verse number 8, Who shut up the sea with doors when it break forth as if it issued out of the womb? When I made the cloud the garment thereof, and the thick darkness the swaddling band of it, and break up for it my decree place, and set bars and doors, and said, Hitherto shalt thou come, but no further, and here shall thy proud waves be stayed. He's talking about the ocean here, the seas of the world. He's saying he covers them with a garment. The cloud is their garment over the seas, and a thick darkness is a swaddling band over the seas. He puts a barrier on them to with the gravity and the ocean sands to hold the beach sands to hold the water in its place. He says, you're not going to cross over this boundary. And Job, he says, you don't know anything about this. You have no control over that. Job, you don't know, you couldn't do anything about all of these things that I've done. It is impossible for you. It's way beyond you. And he describes all these things of the greatness of God there. Then next we see in verses 12 to 15 that he asks, do you command the sunrise? All right, now this one here, watch carefully. It's a little bit difficult to see the sunrise in this, but verse number 12. Hast thou commanded the morning since thy days and caused the day spring or the dawn to know his place? So here's talking about the sun rising in the morning. He says, you haven't commanded the morning to tell the sun what time to come up and what time to go down. You haven't decided where the sun is going to come up. Verse 13, it might take hold of that it might take hold of the ends of the earth and that the wicked might be shaken out of it. All right, so he says when the sun comes up and the bad things go hide, you know, the wild animals and the evil men, they go hide when the sun comes up. He says, you weren't in control of any of that. And verse 14, it is turned as clay to the seal, and they stand as a garment. All right, so that's a little hard to really understand, and I'm not really sure exactly what that's talking about, but the clay to the seal, when they put a seal into the clay took its form of the seal there. And so it's talking about the sun doing that. Some people say that it maybe has to do with how the clay would harden with the sun when the sun would come up. And the stands like a garment, the beauty in the sky of as it changes throughout the day and the sunrise and the sunshine and the sunset and all that and the beauty like a garment, describing it there. And from the wicked, their light is withholden, and the high arm is broken. So here he's talking all about the various aspects of the sun shining and the things that take place here and the rotation of the sun and the time it comes up and the time it goes down and the beauty of the sky. Then in verse 16, it's just one verse in this section here, he says, what do you know about the deep sea? Verse 16, hast thou entered into the springs of the sea, and hast thou walked in the search of the deep or of the depths? You know, Job knew nothing about the depths of the sea. How would you see that? You know, you can look out at the ocean and say, well, it looks deep, but I don't know anything about what's underneath there. And yet Job knew nothing about that. God knew all about that. You know, the deepest place in the ocean, if you look that up, the deepest place in the ocean is a place called the Mariana Trench. It's up north of New Guinea, near Guam. And that trench is 10,994 meters deep. That's almost 11 kilometers deep. That's a deep hole. And God made all that. But Job didn't see any of that. God knew all about that. Job knew nothing about that. And so he's bringing that to Job's attention. Verse 17, he says, what do you know about death? Verse 17, have the gates of death been opened unto thee? Or hast thou seen the doors of the shadow of death? He said, Job, you don't know anything about death. You don't know what's on the other side. You don't know. You can't see through those gates. You don't know anything about that. You know, there's been all kinds of people who make claims that they had a near-death experience or they died and came back, and they have all kinds of weird stories. And usually, they're happy stories. And here's a pagan guy that doesn't know anything about God, doesn't love God, but he comes back with this happy story about, you know, it's really nice and shiny on the other side and all is well. You know, I don't know what to think about all those stories, but I do know the devil's clever in deceiving people into thinking that all will be well when all will not be well, for those who do not know him. But God says, you don't know anything about the other side of death. The only thing we really know about the other side is through what God's told us in the scriptures. Other than that, we don't know anything about the other side. And so he was sharing this with Job and opened up Job's eyes to these things. And then we see in verse number 18 that he asked him, how broad is the earth? Verse number 18, hast thou perceived the breadth of the earth? Declare, if thou knowest it all. He says, Job, do you know how big the earth is? Do you know how broad it is? Well, how is Job ever going to do it? Now, that's something we kind of know a little bit about. Because we've got satellites, we've got airplanes and things like that, and we can see a little bit more of that. We know how big the earth is now. And so this is one of the questions that people today would know more about than Job did, but Job didn't have any idea. He had no way of knowing those kind of things. And so he's pointing that out to Job. He says, you can't answer that question. You don't know anything about that. It's beyond your skill and wisdom. And then verse 19 to 21, he asks him another question. What do you know about light? Verse number 19, where is the way where the light dwelleth? And as the darkness, for where is it the place thereof? I says, where does light stay and where does darkness hide? Well, that's a weird kind of a question. We know the sun rises, we know there's a sun out there, but, well, you know, the start and finish of all that, it's because of the rotation of the earth. We know all that. Job may not have even understood all that. Verse 20, that thou shouldest take it to the bound thereof, and that thou shouldest know the paths of to the house thereof. All right, so he's talking about, you know, how do you find the light? Where is its source at? Knowest thou it because thou wast then born, or because the number of thy days is great? He says, Job, you're a young fella. You weren't around then. You weren't around when all this, I created all this, I designed all this beauty of the sun and all the various things that the sun can do. And you know, scientists today know that light is formed from energy created by the movement of electrons, but there's much that they still do not know about light. There's a lot that don't know about light. Light is a mystery. And yet God knows all the details of that. And see, in all of these things that God's bringing out, God's saying, I understand this perfectly, Job. You don't understand it. You couldn't explain this to me at all. And true with us as well. We may be able to answer a little bit on a couple of these questions because there's been discoveries made, but a lot of this is mystery to us. We can't, and certainly we can't control any of it, even though if we understand a little bit of it. Then this next one here, verse 22 to 23, I like this one, it's a good one. He says, what do you know about the snow? Verse 22, hast thou entered into the treasures of the snow, or hast thou seen the treasures of hail, which I have reserved against the time of trouble, against the day of battle and war? Why? So he's asking, Job, what do you know about the snow? You know, snow is something that's very unique, very interesting. God talks about a storehouse of snow. And it's not like God's got a big pile of snow up there someplace and then he opens a spigot and dumps it out once in a while. But we know that there is, you know, from Job's perspective, you know, why did it snow instead of do something else? And how did the snow form? And snow is very interesting. I looked at some very interesting information here. Snowflake begins from a form, begins to form when an extremely cold water droplet freezes onto a pollen or a dust particle in the sky. This creates an ice crystal. The ice crystal falls to the ground, or as it falls to the ground, water vapor freezes onto the principal crystal, building new crystals, the six arms of the snowflake. The snowflake crystal has six arms of what? Every single snowflake has six arms that come out of it. And there's the main crystal in the middle, and then six little ones out on the outside of it. And they form as it's falling from the sky. And every one of them are unique. That is amazing of God's ability. It just, God is so powerful. And Job knew nothing of that. Job couldn't explain any of that. Then he goes on in verse 24 to 28. And he says, how do the storms take place, Job? What do you know about the storms? Verse 24. What way is the light parted that scattereth the east wind upon the earth? Let me stop there for a moment. You know, scientists have discovered that light has a bearing on the storms. There's something about the sunlight that activates and causes some of these reactions that make the storms. God's telling us about it right here. Who hath divided the water course? for the overflowing of the waters or the ways of the lightning and the thunder to cause it to rain on the earth where no man is, on the wilderness wherein there is no man, to satisfy the desolate waste ground and to cause the bud of the tender herb to spring forth. Hath the rain a father, or who hath begotten the drops of dew? See, he says, Job, you don't know anything about the rain either. You can't cause it to rain. Why is it that I cause rain to fall on the places where there's no men there? It's just a desolate wilderness. And yet I still cause it to rain there. I cause the rain to fall on all these places. You don't have anything to do with it, Job. You cannot see that. You cannot control that. You can do nothing about it. Job, you know nothing about it. You don't even know whether the rain's got a father. He says, I take care of all that stuff, Job. It's all part of my wisdom and my plan. And so Job is left behind on this. He talks here about the evaporation and the clouds forming and the thunder and the lightning and all these lightning bolts. All of that is all part of God's plan. Marvelous plan. I mean, you stop and think about that. God didn't have to cause the thunder and the lightning to be able to send rain, but that is unique to the things that God did. And he did it for a purpose, to show his power and his might. And we see God's greatness once again here. Then he asked Job how ice was formed. He had talked about the snow, now he's talking about ice in verses 29 to 30. Out of whose womb came the ice and the hoary frost of heaven? Who hath gendered it? The waters are hid as with a stone, and the face of the deep is frozen. All right, so here he's saying, where did the ice come from? Where did this come from? He talked about how someone gendering it or giving birth to the ice. Who gives birth to the ice, Job? And Job couldn't answer that. Where does ice come from? How does ice form? That is a mystery to them. He didn't know all that stuff. And this is, it's very interesting. Water is the only non-metallic substance that expands when it freezes. God did that uniquely. And its density decreases and expands approximately 9% by volume. And that is unique to God's creation of ice. And yet, why does ice form? Well, we know it forms when it gets cold. He says when it gets cold there, then the waters become like a stone. They're frozen solid, and the deep is frozen. And it's, how many of you have been in places where you could walk on the ice? It's cold. Lena has. Some of you have, yeah, but the rest of you. I mean, it's cool to walk out on a pond or a lake. You walk out there and you think, I'm nervous a little bit first. You walk out there and jump a little bit, make sure it's not cracking. But chop a hole in it, as long as it's about, 100 mil thick, you're not going to fall through. But it's interesting. God freezes it. How does that happen? God does it uniquely in a very wonderful way, freezes the ice to us. For us. And then verses 31 to 33, he asked Job another question. Can you control the stars, Job? Can you control the stars? Verse number 31. Canst thou bind the sweet influences of Pleiades and loose the bands of Orion? Canst thou bring forth Mazaros in his season? And canst thou guide Arcturus with his sons? Knowest thou the ordinances of heaven? Canst thou set the dominion thereof in the earth? See, these are talking about different constellations of stars. Some people are pretty good about knowing the stars. I look out there and all I know is they twinkle. I couldn't find one star from another one. But many people could point up and say, oh, there's that constellation there. See them right there? And if you study them, you can see that. And Job, back in those days, that's what they did. You lay out at night and look up at the stars and learn all the constellations. Job knew the constellations. And when he talks about Pleiades and Orion and Mazaros and Arcturus, Job knew what he was talking about. But Job had no control over any of that. He didn't put them in their place. He didn't make a move. And he couldn't keep them in their course where they are. Job had no control over that at all, and neither did any of us. That is something totally controlled by God. And to think that the stars stay so accurately in their place that mariners can use them to locate their positions on the oceans and they can follow them in the deserts. if they know how to look at the stars and they can guide them. I'd be lost. I'd go up and say, well, I don't know. They all look alike to me. But those who study them can see that, and God has carefully kept that in control. And that is very helpful. And Job had no control over that. One last question about the nature. He says in verse 34 to 38, can you change the weather, Job? Can you change anything about the weather? Verse number 34, hast thou lifted up thy voice to the clouds that the abundance of waters may cover thee? He said, Job, you ever call up to the sky and say, come on, clouds, drop the rain now? He says, you can't do that. You and I have no control of that. Verse 35, canst thou send lightnings that they may go and say unto thee, here we are. Who hath put wisdom in the inward parts? Or who hath given understanding to the heart? Who can number the clouds in wisdom? Or who can stay the bottles of heaven? When the dust groweth into the hardness and the clouds cleave fast together. He said, Job, you can't control the coming down of the rain. You can't bottle it up in heaven. You can't keep it there and let some places dry out and become hard and crusted over. You can't do any of that, Job. You have no control over the weather at all. You know, that is true today. You know, weather people and scientists have discovered ways that they can do a little bit of things to kind of get the clouds to drop a little bit of their rain, but they can't do much to control it. And you know, you can tell that by just looking at the weather forecast. You know, half of the time they're wrong. And it's because they don't know. And they can't control it. But God's in control of all that. And he says, Job, you have nothing you can do about any of these things. So here's these questions he's asked Job about the physical world. Now he's going to ask Job in chapter 39 questions about the animal world. But it actually starts in verse 39. Perhaps the division of the chapter should have been up a few more verses here. It would have made it easier. But verse number 39, he asked him, can you feed the lions and the ravens? All right, wilt thou hunt prey for the lion? Or fill the appetite of the young lions when they couch in their dens and hide in the covert of and abide in the covert to lie in wait? Who provideth for the raven his food when the young ones cry unto God? They wander for their lack of meat. All right, so he says, are you going to go hunt for the lions? How do the lions get their food? Job, you don't have any control over that. I send those lions out there. I show the lions where to go. I show the lions how to find food. I show them how to conquer their foes so they can be able to have something to eat. I provide for them. And Job, you don't have anything to do with that. You can't control any of that. You can't feed the lions. Then the next question he asks about the animals in verses 1 to 4, he talks about the wild goats. All right, he asks him questions about the wild goats and their habitat. He says, knowest thou the time when the wild goats of the rock bring forth, and canst thou mark the hinds when the hinds calve? So he says, do you know when the wild goats have their babes? Do you know when the hinds, the wild deer there, have their calves? Do you know when they do that? Job, you don't know that. Canst thou number the months that they fulfill, and knowest thou the time when they bring forth? So he says, Job, do you know how long? You know, every animal has a little bit of different time of their time they have to carry their babe. And he says, how long? You don't know how long that is for them. You've not gone up there and timed any of that. You don't need that. But he says, God, I know. I know. I created them. I put it in them. I know exactly the answer to that, Job. And then verse 3, they bow themselves. They bring forth their young ones. They cast out their sorrows. Their young ones are in good liking. They grow up with the corn. They go forth and return not unto them. So he says, Job, I'm in control of their lifestyle. I know when they give birth. I know how to get those little ones out there eating in their fields, in their flocks, in their pastures. And I know how to provide for them, and they can take off and be on their own again. I do all that, Job. You don't do any of that. You can't control any of that with the wild goats. And then he goes on to talk about the wild asses in verse 5 to 8. Who hath sent out the wild ass free? Or who hath loosed the band of the wild ass? Whose house I have made the wilderness and the barren land his dwelling? He scorneth the multitude of the cities, neither regardeth he the cry of the driver. The range of the mountains is his pasture, and he searcheth after every green thing. So here he's talking about these wild donkeys. These wild donkeys are admired because of their freedom. They just see them bounding over the mountainsides and they're doing their own thing. And yet they have an amazing ability to survive in very, very harsh conditions. And God put that in them. Any other creature, you put a cow up there, it'd die. If you put a sheep up there, it'd die. But these wild animals, God has placed them in their habitat, and they are able to survive because God put that in them. God gave them that ability. And God took care of them and meets their needs and provides for them day by day. And then verses 9 to 12, he says, can you tame a unicorn? Now the unicorn here, I tell you right to the start, it's not a one-horned animal. It was an extinct animal called an auroch, auroch. But an extinct, fierce animal, very fierce and powerful animal, probably something like an ox, but a wild, fierce animal. And he says here, will the unicorn be willing to serve thee and abide by thy crib? Canst thou bind the unicorn with his bands in the furrow? So he says, can you put the harness on him and let him pull the plow through the furrows of the field? And will he harrow the valleys for thee? You know, you're going to be able to use him to pull your plow and till your fields like you do your regular ox? Wilt thou trust him because his strength is great? And wilt thou leave thy labor to him? He says, you're going to put him out there and let him take care of the farm work for you? He says, Job, you know you can't do that. Wilt thou believe him that he will bring home thy seed and gather it into thy barn? He said, Job, you know very well none of that is true. That thing is wild. He is dangerous. He's fierce. And you could never tame him. You could never control him and cause him to be your oxen that would plow your fields and pull your wagons for you. You'll never get him to do that, Job. It's not the way he's going to be. And Job knew that. He says, Job, you can't control him at all, not a little bit. Verse number 13 to 18, he says, did you design the characteristics of the birds? Verse 13, gavest thou the goodly wings to the peacocks, or the wings and feathers to an ostrich, who leaveth her eggs in the earth and warmeth them in the dust, and forgetteth that her foot, the foot may crush them, or that the wild beast may break them. She is hardened against her young ones as though they were not hers. Her labor is in vain without fear, because God hath deprived her of wisdom, neither hath he imparted to her understanding. That time, what time she lifted up herself on high, she scorneth the horse and the rider. So he says here, God's telling Job, he says, the reason the ostrich is so stupid, the reason the ostrich lays his eggs in the sand and leaves them there and not thinking about somebody could crush him, the reason the ostrich doesn't take care of his young like he should is because I put that in him. And I'm going to enable them to survive that way, but I put that in them. So they're different than the other creatures. But he says, I gave the ostrich those little short wings that aren't any good for flying. But the scientists have studied the ostrich out, and they say that the reason they have those wings is because as they're running, they stick them out to help them balance as they're running. God didn't make any mistakes. He says, I gave them exactly what they need. And he says, when they're running, you try to chase them with a horse, he says, you'll never catch them with a horse. They'll outrun a horse every time. And so he says, I've given them abundant strength and abundant power, but they lack wisdom to even take care of the little ones. But I put that in them, and they'll be all right because I took care of them. I designed it that way. And God's just showing Job every single one of these situations. Job, he had no answer for, but God was taking care of the situation. Then we see verses 19 to 25, he talks about the horses. This is quite interesting. Hast thou given the horse strength, and hast thou clothed the neck with thunder? The word thunder there, you look it up and it's talking about its mane, the beautiful long mane that comes down. I'm not sure why it's called thunder here. But did you clothe its neck with a long mane? Canst thou make him afraid? Canst thou make him afraid as the grasshopper? All right, so here it's probably talking about the fact that the horse leaps a lot like the grasshopper when it's running. Or the glory of his nostrils is terrible. You know, when a horse snorts and his nostrils are extended and he's got the big nostrils there, he says, Job, you didn't do any of that. He paweth the valley and he rejoiceth in his strength. He goeth on to meet the armed men. They used to use them in battle, and the horses seem to love that. He mocketh at fear and is not affrighted, neither turneth back from the sword. And the quiver rattleth and against him and the glittering spears and the shield. And he swallows the ground with fierceness and rage. Neither believeth he that it is the sound of the trumpet. He saith among the trumpets, aha, ha, and smelleth the battle afar off, and the thunder of the captains and the shouting. So these horses, they get excited, they get thrilled, they get, you know, these horses were trained for battle. And they would, these soldiers would be riding these horses, and the horse would hear the trumpet sound, and the horse would get excited and start racing into the battle. And the excitement of the, remember those days, it wasn't guns and bullets, it was, you know, swords and spears, and they're going in there clashing their swords against each other, stabbing each other, and the horse is excited, and he's ripping around, turning around. The horse loved that excitement. And God put that all in them, the ability to do all that. And he says, this isn't anything you can control, Job. It's all of something I've done. You have nothing to control over this. And then one last one. He talks about the eagles and other birds here, verse 26. He says, does the hawk fly by thy wisdom and stretch out her wings toward the south? Doth the eagle mount up at thy command and make her nest on high? She dwelleth and abideth on the rock, upon the crag of the rock in a strong place. From thence she seeketh the prey, and her eyes behold afar off. Her young ones suck up blood, and where the slain are, there is she. All right, so he says, I put these instincts in these birds. Those eagles were able to fly way up high, and they put their nest way up in the tops of the rocks and way up in the tops of the trees. I put that instinct in them, and I gave them the ability to see afar off, and they can fly over and they see amazingly. You know, you read about the eagles and some of these other birds of prey like that, that God put a brilliant eyesight in them, and they can see a little mouse or a snake on the ground, and they come diving down from a very high distance and just swoop down there and just grab the thing and take off. And God put that all in them. The great ability. And God gave them that great instinct and the ability to do those things. And he says, Job, you didn't have any control over any of that. Now, as we look at these two chapters, Job had no control over the physical world or the animal world. It was all something of God. God had complete control over it. God designed it, he created it, he cared for it, and he controlled it. Now, if we stop and think about that and really ponder all the things of nature and all the things of the animal kingdom and realize that we have no control over any of it, it's all something God did. God was in full control. And since God did all that, Job had no right to question God's sovereignty in allowing him to go through suffering. He said, Job, why are you asking me what I'm doing in your life? I'm in control of all things. I'm in control of everything you see in nature. I'm in control of all the creatures you see. I am in control of everything. I haven't left you, Job. I'm in control. I know what I'm doing. It's all right. And you know, since God has such great power, care, and discernment, we too need to trust God when the troubles come. When the trials come, the hardships come, the disappointments come. We need to trust God and say, God, you're a great God. You're in control of everything in nature. You're in control of all the animals. I can do nothing to them. I can't make the sun rise. I can't keep the ocean in the water. I can't cause anything to happen out there, God, that you're in control of. And certainly, God, if you can do all that, you can take care of me. We've got to trust Him. You know, I'm preaching it myself here tonight, but I think all of us can glean from it. Our God is wise and loving and sovereign, and we need to trust Him. He is all-powerful. He makes no mistakes.